Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Makone Maja. Let's get into the first news story of today, and this is a significant court blow to the National Health Insurance Scheme that government has been pursuing for the last decade. Solidarity took the National Health Insurance to court specifically over the aspect of the National Health Insurance a scheme that requires so-called certificates of need. The idea behind this is that if you want to establish a private practice in a particular area, if the government does not believe that there is a need for that your particular service as a medical practitioner in that area, they do not have to issue you a certificate of need, which would effectively give government complete control over where doctors can work. The Pretoria High Court found was considering an application brought by the Union Solidarity, as well as a number of groups representing private practitioners of healthcare services, and the judge ruled that in terms of Section 36 and 40 of the National Healthcare Act, it was invalid in its entirety that government had the power to determine where medical practitioners may practice. If conditions are not accepted and no certificate is issued, the private healthcare establishment and private healthcare provider services are no longer able to operate where they have been. They will become unavailable to persons who relied upon them. The right to access private healthcare establishments and private healthcare providers is accepted in our law. This is particularly important in circumstances where private healthcare establishments and providers are able to offer services not yet available in the public sector, said the judge, Anthony Miller. So he said basically that the certificate was not rational, and he ordered that the judgment be directed to the Constitutional Court within 15 days for confirmation of the order of invalidity the High Court made, and ordered that the Minister, the Director General, and the President pay costs. So that's a pretty big win, it seems like, for Solidarity and its allies in this case, and a pretty big blow to NHI. I know this was one of the aspects of the NHI. There are many other terrible aspects of the law, but this is one of the aspects that really, I think, irritated a lot of healthcare providers, because effectively they would become, you know, de facto under micromanaged by the state, regardless of whether they actually worked for the state sector or not. Makone, what do you make of this? And do we think that NHI will actually survive the court processes going forward?
A very important court decision coming out of the High Courts, and I'm sure that it will be challenged, Nick. I have no doubt that it will be escalated to the Concord, but I think a step in the right direction nonetheless. I think that this element of the NHI that's wanting to have control over where medical healthcare professionals can work has sort of flown under the radar. A lot of us have been focusing on how it affects us personally, in the sense that, you know, they're pooling all our funds that we contribute towards health insurance and then being used to advance the government's own idea of what's good for us and what's not good for us. But I think that this is one of those areas that needed specific attention, because while it is true that the NHI wants to centralize funds, key to that is that it wants to have control over where people can and cannot work. And I think that level of authoritarianism has no place in our liberal democracy. And so it's an important court decision for medical health professionals, because people have the right to decide where they want to make a living. And unfortunately, it is key to the National Health Care Insurance, NHI, to the National Health Insurance, that the government gets to designate specific areas where healthcare professionals can work, because of course a lot of doctors will opt to not work in places where there are not so many opportunities, like in some of those remote provinces. And you see this with the failure of NHI flagship hospitals to rise, like Chilidzini Hospital in Venda. It's one of those flagship hospitals that has just been a disaster, despite it being identified as a key project of the National Health Insurance Project. And so I have often felt disappointed with the fact that not enough unions have come forward to defend the rights of workers that they purport to exist, to defend. And we've actually written to NEHAU as the Institute of Race Relations. We've written to SAMATU. These are two of some of South Africa's healthcare trade unions, writing to them to ask them, why do you support the NHI when it seeks to to give government so much control over the movement of healthcare professionals? And unfortunately, we haven't gotten responses from those trade unions, but at least a trade union like Solidarity actually acts in the interests of its members and of healthcare professionals at large. I think all healthcare professionals in this country get to benefit from this single judgment immensely. But it also sets the government back and puts the government in its place, because it's one thing to expropriate people's funds and decide to use them to advance your own agenda, but it's another thing to say to people, as if you're deploying them like you do the military, to say you're going to work here because you're going to help us advance our project, whether you like it or not. I think that's a very hard line in the sand for me. They've already crossed several of those lines with the signing of the NHI, but I think this is one that the government definitely needed to get whacked on. And I'm very happy to see that the High Court did exactly that.
Definitely. And of course, this is not just a victory for healthcare providers, but for all South Africans, because the exodus that would have resulted in terms of healthcare professionals from this country, if you placed these kind of restrictions on them, I think would have been significant and would have affected everyone from the poorest to the richest by reducing the number of people and types of services available when it comes to healthcare in the country. There is a limited number of doctors in the country, and there's often, you know, some kinds of collaboration between the private and public sectors. So even the poorest would have really been hit hard by all of our doctors, or lots of our doctors leaving for better climes, where they don't get forced to have to work in certain areas. Yes, so a great thing, and we'll hope that there'll be many more court decisions against the NHI going forward, and hopefully that will halt the law, which would have done enormous amounts of damage to South Africa's people. Okay, let's go on to our next story, and this is talking once again about the politics of the Government of National Unity, which is that the Democratic Alliance is not withdrawing its electoral court challenge against President Ramaphosa. Now, this challenge was made just before the election, when Ramaphosa called a speech, the annoyingly called family gatherings, where he talked about the end of the previous presidential term and gave what the DA says amounts to effectively a campaign speech, which I think is a pretty fair assessment. The DA says that this was an abuse of state resources because he was acting in his capacity as president, not as leader of the ANC, when he was doing this talk, and yet essentially it was an advert for the ANC, is their argument. And so they want the electoral court to find against it. When questioned whether this would sort of undermine the Government of National Unity, DA spokesperson said the party was not going to drop the case just because it was a member of the GNU. They said, being in a GNU with the ANC doesn't mean we all of a sudden stop defending the Constitution. It means we have an even greater duty to do so. So, I mean, I have no idea, legally speaking, whether the DA case has any grounds here. I mean, I think morally they're correct, but the electoral court may not find that this was illegal by Ramaphosa. But I do think that strategically and politically speaking, this is quite interesting. The DA is trying to walk a very delicate and complicated line. On one hand, it's trying to build relationships with people in government. It's defended the president a couple of times recently. It's spoken, you know, positively about the Government of National Unity, and it's vowed to work with the ANC and some of its allies. And at the same time, they're also kind of launching various attacks on government and some of these policies. For example, I think continuing to pursue this case is quite interesting. What do you make of this? And do you think this is actually a strategy that can work? It's a little bit of a delicate tightrope to walk.
Well, Nick, I actually think the family meetings were endearing at first, but they quickly became annoying given the circumstances under which they were being held. I agree that the DA is walking a very fine line there, because on one hand, they're acting in defense of the Constitution when it relates to the president speaking ahead of an election, which on the merits, I think I think the electoral court should find in the DA's favor, because we need to maintain that separation between the state and the party, which I think the ANC crosses almost doesn't recognize at all at times. We know the pipeline from the NEC to government has been a very strong, steady force in the country. But I think speaking on political matters that could swing the election in your favor, whether you believe it or not, it didn't, ultimately it didn't. But I think it's still a line that the president should not cross, representing whether or not he was representing his party. It certainly appears that he was speaking on behalf of the party at that speech. But I think it's one thing for the DA to appear to be defending the constitution on this matter, but to, in defense of the GNU, say that they will not be pursuing the Palapala issue, because that too affects constitutionalism in the country. And so I think it may be noble for them to continue on with this specific case, but there is clear hypocrisy in the sense that they have been very vocal about the fact that they're going to keep President Cyril Ramaphosa as president despite the corruption allegations, which too are constitutional matters. So it's like, okay, when it's favorable to the DA, they don't pursue court cases against the sitting members of the GNU, but when it's not favorable to them, they do. That's where I think they find themselves in a catch-22, and I think they will continue to be entangled in that sort of dynamo throughout this partnership, throughout the GNU.
I think that there is, at least to some degree, an attempt here to kind of split the ANC. And I think the ANC is also trying to do the same thing to the DA, kind of trying to split the ministers off from the rest of the party. But that the DA is attempting to split the ANC and keep the sort of Ramaphosa faction more in its camp, and then hopefully in their minds jettison some of the other more, shall we say, less enthusiastic parts of the ANC. So both parties are actually engaged in what I might kind of call a political tango of death, where each is trying to sort of kill and absorb the other. One kind of gets the sense that this is going to be a little bit like that that movie Highlander, you know, there can only be one. I think this is going to be the very important political story of the next 5 years, is do they actually manage to split each other, and how does politics actually realign after the next election? Any final thoughts?
Political tango of death sounds just about right. It's enough hostility and animosity, but also enough passion, I guess, to sort of keep the dance and the rhythm of
and
the
closeness
thing going.
Too.
Oh, of course, intense closeness to keep the the party going.
Indeed. Anyway, let's move on to our next one, and this is a statement put out by the Institute of Race Relations, i.e. a statement put out by us, talking about President Ramaphosa's acknowledgement of the importance of property rights. Now, we kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier in the week in the show, but the president sort of seemed to kind of, or at least his government seems to be sort of contradicting itself in important ways. In his speech to the opening of Parliament, President Ramaphosa talked up the value of title deeds and allowing South Africans to own the property that they live on to make sure that they can use it as they see fit, either as sort of collateral for financial opportunities or simply to have security of property so that they have the protection of the law. So he argued that title deeds are important, but at the same time, he's also got the expropriation bill sitting on his desk, the expropriation bill, which will in many ways effectively allow the government to have to pay nil compensation for property that it expropriates from people, massively devaluing everyone's title deeds and making all property in the country, not just land, as is often falsely assumed, essentially vulnerable to government abuse. But Corne, what do you make of this?
Yeah, so I think Chris Patterson picked up from the Institute, picked up those statements by the president. And although we are encouraged to hear him affirm the importance of property rights, and also by the fact that he seems to sign bills in batches and has had two opportunities to sign on the expropriation bill and hasn't done so. And if the viewers recall, the Institute has petitioned against the bringing to assent of the expropriation bill. It also presents a problem for the president because he wants to use the expropriation bill as a means to an end, as a way of advancing property rights of dispossessed South Africans. And so that creates uncertainty, not just for us as regular South Africans, but certainly for investors, which are great stakeholders in this country. So I think there's a lot to be done in terms of transferring title deeds to regular South Africans. I think there's a number out there about how many title deeds are held by municipalities, the backlog of title deeds that are just sitting within municipalities that are not being given away to their rightful owners. There's a lot of work that needs to be done there. I don't think that the expropriation bill is the way to advance property rights. You just cannot purport to advance property rights by also compromising them. That is something that we need to be resolute about in the country, and definitely sending back the expropriation bill to Parliament to reconsider those unconstitutional elements is something that's very well within the president's rights. And I'm hoping that he will still do it, hold off on signing it and send it back to a Parliament that looks very different again from when the expropriation bill was first brought to the floor.
Indeed. I think it's very important that the president don't sign this bill because it would be a huge sign to everyone that indeed the government of national unity is a different kind of government to what has come before, and that is a government that is actually going to encourage prosperity rather than simply extract wealth for the connected few. Okay, that is all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.